You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome back to Fly on the Call, candid conversations on music. Today's guest is Partner, who released their sophomore album, Never Give Up, at the end of last year. Never Give Up is full of shredding, classic rock tropes turned on their heads, and a whole lot of fun. That fun is the most important part for Partner. It's a core value of their music, both for the members themselves and, they hope, for their audience. This conversation hits on that, how they keep things light despite the state of the world, humor as a seed of songwriting, learning to turn your vision into reality, and more. Before we hop into the interview, I just want to give a quick reminder that Fly on the Call is currently running a giveaway to celebrate 500 followers on Twitter and help spread the word of Intransitive. Intransitive is an Arkansas-based trans-led organization seeking to create brave spaces for trans people and offer financial assistance to those in emergency situations. Entry is free, and everyone who enters will receive a Fly on the Call sticker, pin, and or keychain. There are also three prize packs with merch from the Wonders, Origami Angel, Pentimento, and Grey Matter. I'll be matching any donations made to Intransitive, and so far we've raised $100 together. Check the links in the show notes for full details, and here is my conversation with Partner. I feel like Never Give Up kind of reads like a love album to rock music as a whole. And I'm curious if you could talk a little bit just about kind of what role you see rock music playing in music in 2021 and kind of like where you see Partner fitting within that as well.
That's a good question. Lucy?
I feel like I actually have no idea where rock music is going. So I think we kind of just wanted to throw this out there as like, a signal if anyone else wants to pick up what we're putting down. We're throwing out our love letter to rock music and people seem to be responding to it. So yeah, it's anyone's guess where rock music goes, you know?
Yeah, maybe that pendulum will swing back.
In the classic rock territory.
In the classic rock, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like really interesting the way you kind of turn some of the classic rock conventions on their head, you know, on songs like Rock Is My Rock or Big Gay Hands. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of like, you know, bringing a kind of lens to rock music that hasn't necessarily always been there?
Yeah, well, like it's really, really easy to turn classic rock on its head because all you have to do is be a woman or gay or not, you know, not a cis het man singing about like whatever the fuck. So like we just be ourselves and have riffs and then ta-da. It's pretty much right. Like I feel like we don't like overthink it or anything.
There is kind of like a lot of, you know, hopping around and genre blending to keep people on their toes as well. And I'm curious, like during the writing process, kind of what is that discovery process like for you? Kind of like finding all those little paths to go down.
Yeah. I mean, we love to keep it fresh, like for ourselves, for the creative process. And we usually like we discovered our new motto is to generate foolish excitement. So anything that makes us laugh or that we're like, you know, keep singing over and over, like Rock Is My Rock or something like that, you know, whatever, just like kind of sparks joy, I guess, to borrow.
To borrow from Maria.
And yeah. And we're really passionate about, I think, songs and good songwriting in general. So we're always kind of, that's kind of always the philosophy that's been behind everything we make. It just happens to most often come out in a rock way, but we do listen to a lot of pop and different genres.
Yeah. I mean, can you talk a little bit more about kind of that following of your bliss? Because I feel like that's something that not every artist does, but it's very evident in your music.
I couldn't imagine not, you know, that's like, that's the most intoxicating part, right? Like, I think
we have no patience for like boring songs.
Or being bored bored. We'd rather do anything than repeat ourselves, I guess, in a sense, like not that we don't ever repeat ourselves, but that like, I think that if we were to just do, you know, what feels safe or whatever, we'd have be really restless and like, you know, unfulfilled. So it's got to keep like exploring all the time.
And what does that exploration end up looking like for you? Like listening to new stuff or like kind of experimenting with instrumentation? Like what kind of paths do you end up going down?
Lots of like, I love listening to new music and like, or like not necessarily like what's just been released, but stuff that's new to me. And just like a lot of, a lot of YouTube.
YouTube really influences our music, I would say. Yeah. Like it's like the internet and stuff really influences our music, the stuff that we like end up being exposed to by the algorithm into our music.
And like anything that's like anything you can tell that, you know, that any song that is really, you know, crafted with a lot of heart and a lot of, you know, that always ends up speaking to us. So we'll just listen to it over and over once we get hooked and then
sure. Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned earlier kind of like the craft of songwriting being something that you're very much into. How do you kind of tend to, you know, approach your songwriting?
I think it's like, well, like lately we've been really experimenting with like trying to like do all these different new things, like we've written songs in like a lot of different ways, but like our traditional way is like we have like a concept or like a lyric that we like and we kind of like build it around that. But we're always like trying to find new ways to like to be inspired.
Yeah, usually it's what makes us laugh. Like usually we're in a room with a guitar and we talk a lot, like usually comes out of our conversations, and then they'll like usually Lucy will say something and I'm like, I love that, like
that's a song. Yeah. And if we both just like start laughing and singing, like sometimes we just will say something and then we start singing it in a voice together, and then that like determines the genre. It's like, oh, I guess the song is like sounds like the Eagles because that's how we sang it or whatever.
Nice. And as far as kind of like past that initial stage, like what does your honing in of the songs tend to look like?
Totally. We're really obsessed with like being efficient, really obsessed with, I guess, like the pop format and like really paring it down and having like the sections blend together, you know, as best as they can. So usually we just put a lot of thought, I guess, into like narrowing down like the best way to move forward with the like the little, we call them scraps of joy.
Yeah, scraps of joy.
Nice. Yeah, I love that. And I feel like the kind of like shredding guitar is one of the things that really makes Partner stand out. I'm curious kind of like how you kind of fell into that style and, you know, what was kind of the music that got you into that kind of stuff and helped you develop those chops?
Totally. Well, my dad, I think he decided pretty early on that like a really good way for me to make it in life would be solos. Learning how to do solos. So he really like encouraged that. And I think one of like the most influential things was having Jimi Hendrix like tab book. After I figured out that most everything was tuned down half a step about a year later, I just kind of like took it and ran with it. And so like I was playing a lot of Jimi Hendrix and like Slash stuff and David Gilmour stuff and like all this, like my dad was like a huge influence. So
he's been like this good like for the last at least 10 years, I can verify. Like,
thanks, Liz.
I mean, you've only gotten better, but you've never not been really good.
Yeah, my dad very much got me started on, I owe two things to my parents. Country music, which was kind of like the same, that was kind of what they both agreed on. And then my dad was very much like Alice Cooper, Queen's Greatest Hits, and like Sgt. Pepper's. Those were like the kind of big three for the car rides with him.
Yeah, the Alice Cooper for sure.
Which, I mean, especially as the Alice Cooper band, like that was just one hit album after another.
After the other, yeah. They're great.
And I mean, with the music being so kind of like well produced and arranged, I'm curious what was kind of like the recording process like for Never Give Up, and kind of like as you've been, you know, starting the new phase of music, how has that kind of changed for you with obviously with the pandemic constrictions as well?
Yeah, totally. Well, I think that when we, like, there was some big changes in the band at the end of our first album cycle, and Lucy and I kind of found ourselves back together again, just her and I, and she was like playing drums with her feet and playing bass, and I was playing guitar, and like the songs just started like popping out, like all the scraps of joy were coming out. We were rehearsing for doing shows as a two-piece, and then we had got all our ideas, and then we were like, okay, like then the pressure was on to kind of like get it all up and running. And that process, like, it took for what felt like forever. What do you think, Luz?
Oh yeah. But like, as far as the actual recording, like it was definitely different, because our first album, we wrote it over the course of like 3 freaking years and then recorded it without really knowing much about being in a like professional studio. So it was like a giant learning curve. And then the second album, we already knew kind of our way around the studio, and like we had like pretty solid ideas, but we kind of like, we left maybe like 20% of the composition like till we were in the studio. And like that was cool, because I think it kind of gave it like a fresh feeling, but like we also weren't pressured because we had all these ideas. And we recorded with Steve Chaley at Pal Sound, and he's like a really great engineer, because he's just kind of like extremely knowledgeable. He's worked with all different genres of people, which was great for us, because we like to be all over the place. And he really just lets us do our own thing. Like he just like trusts and like
enables.
What's the word? Like enables and like, you know, makes it work really well. But it's like, yeah, like he just definitely seemed to really be like a great person for us to work with.
And also like we recorded the beds basically. So like in the studio, we did drum beds, bass and rhythm guitar, and then basically took it home and kept working on it in between tours. And so I was doing a lot of arranging and part inventing, just like kind of from home. And that's kind of where it all kind of like started, you know, becoming what it, the final product. And then Chris Shaw, he mixed everything that we've ever released. So I could felt like I could send him whatever and he would make sure everything was in its right place and all that, as long as I was like, you know, making sure that there was enough excitement in the moments, you know, I knew that.
Like sound effects and stuff.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned kind of like some of the learning curve that happened with the first album and how it prepared you better for this one. What were some of those kind of like lessons that you learned in studio?
I would say the number one is like, get it right at the source. You know, just basically not knowing what you can change at what point in the process, like was, you know, a big question mark for us at the, especially for, well, speaking for myself, I was like, oh, well, what's it going to sound like once it's mixed? You know, is it going to sound like that? Or, you know, and like dialing in tones and that confidence and being like, you know, okay, no, like, let's go this direction. And like, I think it was just like, sometimes like if you don't know, it's just kind of like other people's kind of impression of what should be going on kind of, you know, ends up leading things. So I think, yeah, just not knowing how to express what we were going for with that kind of confidence.
Yeah. And even things like, you know, time management, like knowing like how to make the best use of our time. But yeah, I think the biggest thing we learned is the confidence, because like we now know exactly like what we want, or like we knew what we wanted then, but we just didn't know that we were allowed to like say, no, this is what we want or whatever. Like, and now we do.
Yeah. Yeah. And like people would try their best to, you know, guess what we have in mind. But ultimately, like we just have from the beginning such a vision of how everything should sound that like it, yeah, the learning curve of like just like expressing that, you know, there's so many elements to that go into it, right? Like so many.
Yeah, like that kind of finding your confidence, that sounds like kind of like I've heard DIY referred to as decide it yourself instead of do it yourself. And like, I think that confidence is kind of like the key factor there, is like knowing how to tell people what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And like when we were doing like in our old bands, when we were making more like punk music in our shed, it was like easy to tell like our friends how we wanted it to sound or whatever. But like when you get into like a studio and you're like spending money to be there, and like the people there like obviously have more experience in the studio than you, and then you're like start to second guess yourself a bit. But then exactly. We like not second guess ourselves.
And it can be just so hard to tell, you know. I think it's so much about context, and there's no one way to get to a certain tone or to a certain outcome. And sometimes you have to really go with like what you're working with, and like make like kind of like funny decisions or like off the wall kind of calls. And like when people are like casting, you know, or like, I don't know if you can do that, or like, maybe you shouldn't do that. And it's like, it's kind of like a science experiment where you're just like, well, we need to try, you know? And like, I think before we kind of got our confidence, like that push, we weren't like able to kind of like push for that experimentation. And
it's kind of interesting to me, like hearing you talk about that, because I feel like, especially maybe I'm getting this more from like the skits on the first album. I'm kind of like thinking like of a, you know, a little bit of like a contrarian vibe from you, like, you know, so yeah. Could you talk a little bit about like that and kind of like how that fits into the way you approach the band?
Yeah. So I think the skits are polarizing, which is one of the things I love about them. Like some people love them, some hate them, which it's like, I love that. And like, but I think like they're more like, they say maybe more than you would think on the surface. Like, obviously I can totally understand how it's on your shuffle and you're like, I don't want to hear this shit again next. But like what we were really trying to show was like, you know, it's like on the one level, it's like us pretending to ask permission from all these guys. And it's like, but the joke is like, it's up to us, you know, like, and it's like, we're pretending to ask them these ridiculous requests, but it's like, in all reality, if we wanted to do that, we would have just done it. And like, I think, I don't know, I stand by the fact that it shows that we're in control, even if we didn't really know everything that was like everything the first time.
Yeah. And like, I think I can't imagine the recording and composing process being not contrarian or not fine, because it's so much problem solving and so context dependent and so, you know, and like you have an idea and it's like, well, maybe at first like it seems like a bad idea to have Melissa Etheridge on your album cover, but like you don't know. And like that with the skits, it was like, well, that's kind of how we would feel with like a lot of our ideas, was like bringing those to the table and being like, well, I don't know how this is going to be received. And you know, like not all of our ideas are that ridiculous, but like it kind of is a like an exaggeration a bit of kind of a theme.
It was like the logical end to all the questions or like all of the ideas that we'd floated like in already.
Such that like they weren't, no one was like surprised.
Yeah, like they bought it hook, line, and sinker, as you can tell.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like that that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I guess just kind of like expanding that discussion just to the general idea of humor in your music, I feel like it plays such a key role. And I think it does it in a way that seems, you know, to me who grew up like listening to Blink-182 and stuff, it does it in a way that seems very much more like fresh and like definitely a confidence in the way that you're presenting it as well. And, you know, not like beating you over the head with it. So I'm curious, like, how do you go about adding that flair to the music, and why is it like so important for you to have it there?
I would say it's kind of like the seed, like that everything starts with. Like, usually like we laugh at something first and then we build like the song on like the fact that we found it funny or whatever. You know, the song Sex Object, for instance, like we were like, oh, this is like kind of a funny idea. And so that's why we decided to make it into a song. Or Gross Secret, same deal.
But I find like that there's just like pure, when you're laughing, it's just joy, you know, it's like, and it's so pure and it's so like, I've always kind of believed that in any kind of like a good song, there's just an element that's kind of like joyful or something that it doesn't like have to be like an intentional, calculated, cool thing that we've always just found our spark, I guess, elsewhere, you know, just in the laughter, like Lucy says, it's the starting point.
Yeah, like it really and propels us along.
Yeah, that's like, it really keeps us going. So like,
it's like the gas in our car.
Yeah, and I mean, we're like a year into this pandemic now. And like, can you talk a little about like that role of, you know, trying to keep the fun up in an increasingly unsure, unfun world?
Unfun world, that's a great way.
I mean, I think like, not to read too much into it, and this isn't like pandemic specific, but like, I feel like a lot of gay people like have known how to use humor to like fit in or deal with like the shittiness of life. Like, you know, especially like in the past when you're like a kid in like the early 2000s and people are like, you're gay. And you're like, okay, but like, if I make you laugh, you'll stop bullying me or like whatever. Or like, you're like, you know, like life is hard. I'm gay. Time to like joke around. So like, I feel like that's not like a completely bullshit line to draw between those two things, right? Like, so yeah, I think our finding humor in dark times comes partially from our gay experience. But also it's kind of hard to say, right? Because it's like, you know, you have to know, like, you can't laugh at other people. Like, you can only laugh at, you know, it's like punching down or punching up versus down or whatever. It's like, we're not going to be like making light of like somebody else's struggle or whatever. So it's like, you know, we're not necessarily going to put out an album like LOL COVID-19. But like, when we stay in our lane and laugh at like the things that affect us, like, I feel like that's kind of like, they always said that was like the Jackass principle. Like they only like fuck with each other, not like random civilians. And like, that's us.
Except yeah, Bam with his.
Yeah.
But that's not a random parents. Civilian. Yeah, our parents. But yeah, totally. Loose. And I think that like laughter, you know, it's kind of like, I think it triggers your vagus nerve. It's good for like relaxation, you know, it's healthy too. It's like when you're laughing, it kind of all goes away or something. It's like kind of a magical thing. So that, you know, learning to laugh as a coping mechanism and using humor to propel us forward, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm curious, what's like your one of your favorite stories or one-liners that you've been able to fit into a song?
Oh, that's a good question.
Great question. Just right off the top of my head, Martin Long and McQuaid, where we're talking about not letting the kid play the drums. I think I like that a lot.
Yeah, Long and McQuaid that's a fun one. I think like I like in Rock Is My Rock, I don't care if it's a long way to the top. I'm gonna get there. This rock is my rock.
It's so non-beautifully phrased. That's what
okay, I'm
yeah, and I feel like one of my favorite examples of that is Fun for Everyone, parentheses unions, which is just so ridiculously catchy. And I would love to hear the story of how that one came to be.
First of all, yeah. Bless you for liking Minions. Real fan.
And I've never seen the movie either.
Yeah.
So, okay. So I remember exactly when we came up with that one. We were in Germany. We hadn't had any weed for a long time, which is not ideal for us. Then we finally went to a nice person house, Sigma. And we were sitting around the table smoking weed finally. And then we thought of the idea of making a song called Fun for Everyone. And then I think because we were so high with the Minions idea.
I think also, yeah, when I remember it being like an absurdist kind of like, just like, I feel so fucked up, like that, yeah, like nothing makes sense. And like, if nothing makes sense, then I'm going to do this. You know?
Also, it was also inspired by the Tegan and Sarah song in the Lego movie, Everything is Awesome.
Yeah. Just kind of like, why shouldn't we? Why not? I was just kind of a like, it was contrarian as well, like that kind of impulse to be like, tell me I can't. Well, even if you do, I'm still gonna do it.
Yeah, I feel like that also fits in well with like the memes of like minion memes, like Gen Z kids making fun of boomers loving minions.
Minions, yeah, exactly. Yes. Because they're like in Walmart and Dollarama and all are precious.
And we still haven't seen the movie.
I don't have a question with this statement, but I do just have to say that this is a very strangely specific thing, but I feel like Here I Am World would fit perfectly on the original Shrek soundtrack.
Wow, that's Shrek, really, that's right. Awesome.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right between Hallelujah and
Awesome.
I'm a believer.
I'm a believer, yeah.
And then I like to wrap up every episode the same way, which is just by asking for a piece of advice or something you've been thinking about lately, whether it's music or life in general.
Wow, that's awesome.
I gotta say, if you ever hear someone tell you about breath holding as an anxiety reducing practice, I would say listen to them and explore it.
Breath holding? Really,
breath holding. Nothing extreme, but like, so you inhale just like that, and it actually really, really works. Just in terms of it triggers your vagus nerve and your parasympathetic nervous system.
You and your vagus nerve.
But seriously, it's vagus means wandering, and so it affects your whole body, and it also, it's connected to your breathing, and it's triggered when you sing. That's why singing is so therapeutic, because it's basically a long exhale, which triggers your vagus nerve. But it's the wandering nerve, and it connects to your lungs on all your vital organs.
What happens in Vegas?
Yeah. And triggers your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest and digest, and directly counteracts the sympathetic nervous system, which we all kind of live in by default. So it's a bit, wordy, but I gotta say, that shit works. Lucy?
I don't know if I can top that.
I just gotta spread the word, you know, like, I don't know. It's been so much.
Through your vagus nerve.
Just, I've had anxiety my whole life, though, and it's like, you know, I had my first panic attack at like 8 or something. You're like, well, what's that, you know, and to finally find something that works.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably the most concise advice I've gotten on the pod, so I dig it.
A bit random, but I was just doing my exercises before this, so it was on my mind.
And that's that. Thanks so much to Partner for taking the time to talk and helping spread their own brand of joy. Give Never Give Up a spin today and let your troubles melt away, even if momentarily. I'll catch you back on Thursday with another great interview, and don't forget to enter the Fly on the Call giveaway today. Fly on the Call is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. A special thank you, as always, to The Alternative for helping to promote the show, Kaylin West of Tiny Stills for the theme song, and Michaela Jane for the artwork. You can keep up to date by subscribing to the podcast and following the show on Twitter and Instagram at Fly on the Call Pod. Feel free to email any questions, comments, or other feedback to me at flyonthecallpod@gmail.com. Never give up.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from niche music podcasts that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.